honorable members and the team from the department. We'll formally declare this meeting opened by extending a word of welcome to all of you. This is the meeting of the Select Committee on Transport, Public Services and Administration, Public Works and Infrastructure. That is the name of the committee. The committee is chaired by myself. My name is Kenny Mugi Imam from Northern Cape. I will allow honorable members to introduce themselves so that at least the team is at ease in terms of who is here and who is not here. Over to you, veteran.
My name is Muhammad Dango, Gauteng.
My name is Olani Mkiva, I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Nala Kalibiso, Kilidia Kimaradwan Shodi, Kiswa Province in Freestat.
We'll then ask the chair, Mr.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Shopega Mtileni. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tsepo Makanye. I'm the committee researcher. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll then allow the team from the department to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable members. My name is Matavata Mokonyama. I'm the Acting Director General. Just for one more day, we will be having a permanent DG as from tomorrow. And I will allow also the team to then introduce themselves. Substantively, I'm the DTG Public Transport.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members and Colleagues. My name is Manare Mamabolo. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General for Civil Aviation. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee, colleagues. My name is Chris Lavisa, DDG Road Transport. Thank you.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Adam Masombuga, Chief Director, Legal Services.
Morning, honorable Chairperson and honorable members, colleagues. My name is Bosa Lamanzi, responsible for strategic planning, monitoring, and evaluation in the Department of Transport.
Good morning, honourable members, colleagues. My name is Kuki Moloyi from the Office of the Deputy Minister. I'm doing Parliament and Cabinet Coordination. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable chairperson and honourable members. My name is Temba Denza. I'm the Acting DDG for Integrated Transport Planning in the Department of Transport. Thank you.
Good morning, Ayanda Ali Payne, Spokesperson, Ministry of Transport.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Sipodi Vagwane. I am responsible for strategic services in the Office of the DG.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Lewaren Prince. I'm a journalist with Media 24.
Good morning. My name is Maibongwe Ncube. I'm a researcher for the ANC.
Good morning. My name is Joel. I'm just a representative for the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Good morning, my name is Christopher and I'm from an organization called OTA and I'm the parliamentary liaison officer. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Marco Schmidt. I'm working for the German Consulate General here in Cape Town.
Good morning, I'm Enrico Bazir and I'm the committee assistant to the committee.
Good morning, Chair. My apologies for being a few minutes late. Tim Bradisett, member of the committee.
Thank you, honourable members and the acting DG, and the team, and the research and the committee secretary. We must be done by 12 must be done, because I think colleagues would be aware that NA is on, so it's on leave this week. So the NCOT only finished, did the appropriation last night. So therefore, many of them are on their way home. So therefore, but we take the work of this department serious. That's why we had to mobilize members to be around. I suspect we had to do it because we can't afford not to do it, particularly given the strategic importance of transport in terms of our work. We will now, without any waste of time, give over to the. Let's deal first with the apologies, and then we'll then move to the presentation by the department. Committee Secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have received three apologies. The first one is from Honourable Khai, who's attending the Magistrate Commission in Pretoria today. And the second one is for Honourable Boshoff, who has commitment that has been scheduled prior to this meeting. And the next one is for Honourable Matsibula. Thank you.
Thank you, Committee Secretary, for presentation of these apologies. Over to DG. Is it also part of the apologies?
Chairperson, we tender the apology firstly for the Deputy Minister held up in Pretoria, but secondly the Minister missed the flight, the first flight this morning. He will be here, but will arrive slightly late. It's on the next flight.
Thank you, DG, Mr. Dango.
Member Lanzmann is away. I don't know if he's tabled a formal apology, but we know that he's away.
Yeah, look, he's in China, the whip of the committee. He is in China, only coming back after a week, I believe. Of course, we did not receive formal apology, but we appreciate the presentation by Mr. Dango. Honourable members, let's then proceed to the third item on the agenda, the presented by the department. We want to right up front indicate that in the second term, as part of excessive oversight also over your entities, because we are mindful of the number of entities that you are exercising oversight on, that are your areas of strategic leadership. But in the second term, we have isolated two. It will be Sanral and Plaza. Sanral will be on the 28th of August, and then Plaza will be on the 11th of September. With regard to other entities, we will definitely communicate with the department as to when do we intend meeting with those entities. Of course, the expectation is that the leadership of the department will also be there to get us into confidence. What we did, DG?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. We note the Chairperson's remarks about the next appointments. Chair, I will do the entire presentation, and then the colleagues will come in for matters of clarity, comments, and questions should they arise. Chairperson, this is the presentation on the APP of the department as requested. We will talk to the alignment of the department and its mandate in terms of the past MTSF as we are completing the strat plan of the fifth administration, and then we'll talk to the issues that were revised on the APP, and then we'll talk to the APP itself, and then we'll talk to the risk environment of the department. Then we'll talk to the AG findings of the last financial year and how we had attempted to resolve them. Not attempted, how we have resolved them, because we've resolved all of them. And then we will touch the challenges and then talk to the financial information. Now, in terms of the duty alignment to the MTSF, we get our mandate from the Minister's Delivered Agreement and the outcomes of the government. Particularly, we respond to Outcome 6 that talks to an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure. And in the chair, we had committed an agreement to establish a single transport economic regulator, but also to develop a PSP, the private sector participation framework. In terms of the STAR bill, the bill has been approved by for submission to cabinet. We went through a rigorous process. We are at a stage where we want to go to cabinet for one last time, and if approved, it will come to parliament. And then we did finalize our PSP chapter, because then government decided that National Treasury will do the PSP for the entire government. So we did our chapter and submitted to the National Treasury. We can safely say that in terms of STAR, we found each other with DPE. That was what delayed us a little bit. Chair, still on outcome 6, we indicated that we'll improve national transport planning to develop long-term plans for transport. And in that regard, we've got what we call the National Transport Master Plan 2050, NetMap 2050. It's approved, it's a blueprint that guides us in terms of what we do in the transport space. We also planned to develop and implement improved market share in terms of containers on rail versus roads. That is basically the common narrative of moving goods from road to rail. We have developed a national freight strategy that talks to the type of cargo in terms of both volume and type that can be moved from road to rail. This is also, by the way, an apex priority for the sixth administration, and we'll definitely again accelerating momentum in terms of ensuring that we now move beyond the strategy. The other issue in terms of outcome 6 is to improve and preserve national and provincial and local road infrastructure. We've got a program called Sihamba Soge which is basically the provincial road maintenance program. We fund that through the provincial roads maintenance grant, and then direct in terms of conditions of the Divisions of Revenue Act provinces on what to do and where to intervene. But we also then have 22,000 kilometers of network that is managed by SANRA. And then in the same space, we endeavor to improve public transport. We're intervening in 13 cities that have been identified in the public transport strategy by way of rolling out integrated public transport networks. We also have the taxi recapitalization program, wherein we scrap old, unsafe, and unroadworthy taxis, and then give out a scrapping allowance to ensure that the people that are supposed to be who have handed over their vehicles are assisted, whether to buy new vehicles or just to exit the industry if they so wish. The other issue in the same space of efficient and competitive and responsive economic infrastructure, Chairperson, I've spoken to this slide. I think I was reading on to the next slide already. Chair, we are on slide number 7. We also participate into the SIPs. As you would know, the 18 SIPs, strategic infrastructure projects. We participate in SIP 1, SIP 2, SIP 3, SIP 4, SIP 7, and SIP 17. Those are the areas where we intervene in terms of transport interventions. But then, Chair, we also participate in Outcome 7 of government, which is comprehensive rural development and land reform. In this case, Chair, we have developed Access Road Development Plan, which basically assists accessibility in rural areas. And then we also implement the very same IPTNs in district municipalities. We've done 6, we do 2 per year. That is in the space wherein we intervene. We also participate in Outcome 10, which is to protect and enhance environmental assets and natural resources. In this case, we have developed a public transport, a green transport strategy, and we have already canvassed and held awareness campaigns in all 9 provinces for purposes of not only popularizing the strategy but also implementing it. Now, with regard to the vision and mission as they are in the strategic planning document of the department, our vision remains transport being the heartbeat for economic growth and social development, and the mission being lead development of efficient integrated transport systems by creating a framework of sustainable policies, regulation, and implementable models to support government strategies for economic and social and social development. The values that underpins our vision is to maintain fairness, strive for quality and affordable transport for all, stimulate innovation in transport, ensure transparency, accountability, and monitoring of all of the transport operations, and ensure sustainability, financial affordability, accessibility, as well as upholding the Batopele principles. We also then have six strategic goals, chairperson. Being an efficient and integrated infrastructure, transport sector that is safe. And then we also strive for rural access and mobility, like I've indicated about the rural access roads development plan, improved transport services. Number five will be the contribution to job creation, and then the our contribution to the environmental protection. Chairperson, the department, in terms of functional areas or programs, we have seven programs. One being administration, that includes also financial administration, HR, and support services. Program two being integrated transport planning. Program three being rail transport. Program four being road transport. Program five, civil aviation. Six, maritime. And then seven, public transport. Chair, through the fifth term, there were areas where we made revisions to the APP Aerostrat plan, basically on areas that we have either achieved or priorities and policies might have changed. Chairperson, in terms of the status report on the transport sector, in terms of the gender, disability, youth and children, we have removed this from our APP over in the last 2 years because we have achieved the project. The other issue is that, as I have indicated, that we now have the National Transport Master Plan 2050, and we have identified priority interventions. We've removed it as a priority. The white paper has also been submitted to Cabinet for approval, and as a result has been achieved. The green transport strategy removed also because it has been approved. The goal was to have the strategy, so we now have it. And then the STAR bill, we removed this as a result of those prolonged consultations we had. Basically, with the DPE, like I've indicated, we have shifted this target into later years because we are not so sure when we would find each other. We can safely say today that we found each other and we are now back on track. And then these are some of the changes that then we have made onto the APP by setting new targets. We plan to then have the ICT strategy approved by 2022, regional integration strategy by 2022 also, and then we also are in the a position where we want to catch up with the technology and then do research around autonomous vehicle technology, or what are normally called driverless vehicles. Chairperson, with regard to rail transport, the rail bill was removed because it is waiting for the rail policy to be approved. Access arrangements on pricing approaches is a new indicator. It's removed, and the new indicator is the guidelines for rail access regime and regime developed by March 2020, and the rail safety bill has been achieved, hence it is we made those changes in terms of roads infrastructure. The roads policy was achieved and submitted to Cabinet for approval. Access roads development plan developed, and then the road traffic amendment bill is a new indicator. We already at the cluster stage on this one. It is on its way to Cabinet and therefore Parliament. Chair, we had also sought to implement the Airports Amendment
Airport Company Amendment Act. This is still in a bill state. It is still in Parliament. It's one of the bills that we have resuscitated to be considered by the sixth administration. That includes the ATNS bill and the Air Services bill and the Civil Aviation Amendment bills. Chair, we have developed a National Aviation Transformation Strategy. We are now busy developing further refining the curriculum on civil aviation to ensure that there is transformation in that space in terms of how we then train new entrants. The South African Maritime and Aeronautical Research and Rescue Amendment Bill is a new indicator as required of us by the international conventions, and then also the Sudden Search and Rescue Working Group submitted to the Civil Aviation Committee. Chair, Maritime Transport Operation Pakisa, on the work that we were supposed to do, which is the establishment of a marine transport and manufacturing delivery unit, that we have achieved. The merchant shipping bill took slightly longer than we had anticipated, but it is on its way to cabinet and therefore will come to this to parliament later in the year. Chair, we have removed and put onto an operational plan preparations for the 2020 maritime parallel day. It's not yet achieved, it's coming in 2020, but the preparations are well advanced in terms of this project. Maritime Sector Development Council draft bill has now been submitted. This is a new indicator pronounced comprehensive maritime transport policy, what Mr. Dule called CFTP. And then we also then have new targets in terms of maritime. We've added them. All of those are what the majority of them have been in the CFTP, but for doing mock audits, which are to become mandatory by the IMO. So we're preparing for the IMO audit, and we're busy with the mock audits as we're speaking now. And then we are going to develop or draft a SADC agreement on coastal shipping among the SADC countries. And that will also then amend the Marine Pollution Prevention Amendment Bill. And then we also are going to develop the Maritime Energy Efficiency Program. Chair, now this is basically the work in terms of what we have done as per the targets for the 1920 APP. We had 29 targets, and that is the spread in terms of the programs. And in the subsequent slides, we'll show you how we have performed on the Chairperson. These are the targets for 2019-20, which is this year going forward. And these are the targets that will allow Honorable Chairperson and the committee to support our budgets for the 1920 financial year. Chair, we are going to, still in Administration Program 1, conduct 10 community outreach programs on the GYDC. In the year under review, we will also coordinate the function, compile a monitoring report
on the implementation of the Human Resource Development Framework. We'll also ensure approval and monitor the implementation of this HRDP. And then train staff in issuing of bursaries within the department. We'll also develop and monitor the action plans to address audit findings by internal audit and auditor general. We'll later show how we have dealt with the AG findings of the previous financial year. And then we have a departmental risk strategy. This is what guides us in terms of the areas that we need to keep in the radar for purposes of making sure that we mitigate against those that have got or are of high risk. We will conduct a benchmark exercise on transport sector for ICT strategy, Chairperson. We also develop the regional integration framework. That is the ITP, that is program 2 already. And then, like I've indicated, we'll then do the research, our own research as South Africa for autonomous vehicle technology or driverless vehicles, Chairperson. We were caught up a little bit, not unawares, but a little bit unprepared in terms of how we respond to technology. The one case in point is the e-hailing issues, which we had to retrofit into legislation when it came into our shores. So we want to keep up with technology, and then one of the areas we want to tackle is autonomous vehicles. And then, Chair, we as I've indicated, STER is back on track, which is a single transport economic regulator. It is going to cabinet quite soon, and we hope that this year, it will have to be finalized by Parliament. That is our hope, as we cleared the majority of the obstacles. We will develop the guidelines of the rail access regime, Chairperson, and secure approval for the rail safety bill now that the policy would have been approved this year, Chairperson. We'll continue to monitor our Sehamba Soke program, do inspections, bilaterals, support, but also intervene where we need to. This is the program basically run, managed at national, but run and implemented by provinces. We are also consolidating the legislation that governs the entities, and we're starting with the roads entities. The aim there is those that do similar functions, we would want to group them together so that we reduce the number of entities that we have. We at the moment have 12 entities that ranges from regulators, economic regulators, safety regulators, but also implementing entities. We have been given a mandate to ensure that we move with speed to ensure that we implement and monitor the implementation of the National Road Safety Strategy that was approved by Cabinet in the last 2 years. We'll develop an anti-fraud and corruption strategy basically targeting the DLTCs in the main. And then, as I've indicated, the National Road Traffic will be amended to factor in some of the new developments. One thing that comes to mind is to reduce the alcohol limit in terms of those that are supposed to drive vehicles. We're very ambitious. We want to reduce the tolerance level from 0.05 to 0.00. However, we are still in the consultation stage. We have been referred back by the cluster, who said that there are other things that may reflect alcohol content, except for liquor itself, including your cough medications and related issues. So we are really waiting on, and then we are doing, we've been consulting the medical fraternity in that regard. But I'm just pleading out, this is one of the key areas among the other issues that we are refining the National Road Traffic Act. I'm just pleading out that because that will be a very contested area, even when it comes to ourselves for consideration. In civil aviation, we are doing a socio-economic impact assessment on the air services bill. We're combining the licensing regimes, international and domestic, into one, and we believe that we could be able again bring in efficiencies by reducing the number of entities that we have. And then we submit the draft Maritime and Aeronautical Research and Rescue Amendment Bill to the SASA committee. We'll do a due diligence and a business case for a government-owned aviation academy. We believe that is the area where we can intervene in terms of transforming the space. There are quite a number of private academies, but government does not have one. So we're looking at whether government can work, government can have one, and then actively drive the transformation agenda. I will develop the coastal shipping agreement, and then the merchant shipping bill will be coming to cabinet this year. We hopefully we will get the approval by cabinet. We are already at an advanced stage, and then conduct what we call mock audits in preparation for the mandatory IMO, International Maritime Organization audits that are coming in. As we are a member of the IMO, because we don't want to fail those audits. Should we fail those audits, there are some serious consequences. The ships may not even come around South African waters. It's more like what we do in aviation when we then prepare for ICAO audits. And then we draft the Maritime Pollution Amendment Bill, and the Energy Efficiency Program will be developed. And in relation to public transport, Chairperson, we will continue assisting the municipalities until we complete them. We're targeting the district municipalities in terms of transport plans. And then in this coming year, 2020, we will be intervening in Amatol and Capricorn. And then we have the revised tax recapitalization program. We'll continue to implement it and monitor its implementation for purposes of improving and bettering it. Chairperson, the 13 identified cities will continue to support them, but this time around we're factoring in an element of intervention. Some of them are struggling as we speak. Instead of us withholding funding based on the DORA provisions, we will go in and intervene, support, and make sure that they get back onto their feet. There are quite a number of them. Four of them will definitely go into operations at Tekwini, Ekuruleni, Rustenburg, Mangaung, Polokwane, And the fifth one, which is George, will go into additional phases. I think basically God George is in one of the last phases, although they skipped phase 4A because of the infrastructure needs. The Transport Appeal Tribunal will come before amendment bill, will come before Parliament. Excuse me. We have had this act for some time now, and that we have implemented it. We are bringing in some improvements into the legislation. This is where all of these people who don't get permits go and appeal the decisions by the operating license board. Chair, we're not without challenges, and would really like to then share with you our challenges. Chairperson, for obvious reasons, the kind of investments we're putting onto our transport system is not necessarily enough for the needs out there. You still are having huge kilometers of roads that are still not tarred. You still are having areas that are not being accessed in terms of public transportation. And then you still have areas that are not being charged in terms of transformation, looking at aviation, but also manufacturing in the marine space, maritime space. But we also are admitting that there is a need to consolidate some of the funding sources. We know that government does not have enough money. We want to believe that if we can deal with fragmentation of the various funding sources, we can factor in efficiencies and then still strive to do more with the little that we have. But also identify alternative funding sources, Chairperson, where we can, if we are able to rope in private sector without really paying a huge penalty, interest and other related issues. Those are the things that we will look at. And many other alternatives when it comes to funding. Chairperson, the other challenge that we have, I've mentioned that the majority of the things that we do are strategies, policies, and then implementation happens at other agencies or municipalities or at provinces. Now, more than any other thing, we have to push very hard and push very hard to ensure that the provinces implement the policies that we develop at national, but also where we then support in terms of funding. We need to ensure that they do what we said they must do with the monies that we give them. So we believe that more IGR processes need to be put in place. For an example, where you have IGAs, ensure that they are adhered to the agreements or MOUs, but also the conditions that we put in legislation like DORA. And then we also believe that with a much more focused and a much more robust and a much more strengthened oversight capability, we should be able to win the war. In relation to risk governance, Chairperson, we have all of those structures that all of them are dealing with mitigation and management of the risks that we have in the department. We have a risk management environment that has improved over the years. EXCO, which is the top management of the department, remains the main assurance level when it comes to these matters. But we also then have risk management committees and risk champions. And we also have a very robust, we had, because the audit committee's term just is ending today, the current one. We are going to have a new, we will assess its effectiveness. But we are also then assisted by the likes of internal audit in dealing with the identifying and taking our high-risk areas and auditing them regularly to ensure that things don't fall within the cracks. I would not go into the principles in the main because we're here to tell you what we do, not necessarily what the legislation and all the framework says. Now, the situation is that as at the beginning of the year, you had 64% of the rates weighted as rated as high. We put in internal mitigation measures and we put in internal control mechanisms. We managed to bring down that number to 7%, making the green, which were low, to be at 66%. We're not saying everything else is good and right in the department. However, those are the things that, like I said, with those levels, in terms of insurance levels, we are able to then zoom into the high-risk areas and reduce them. I think those are the steps that we took to ensure that we put measures in place to manage the risks, robust as committees, and then how we have performed throughout the year and monitoring our performance targets have helped us a lot, and then implementation of the risk mitigation plan. Chair, we had 18 findings out of the Auditor General's report, basically the management report, not necessarily the audit report. The audit report flagged two areas of matters of emphasis. And then we have finalized all of them in terms of us addressing all the concerns that were raised by the AG in the last financial year. We will have a few chairperson for the 18-19. There are not 18, there are fewer than 18. But we can safely say to the committee that we have an unqualified audit opinion with only one matter of emphasis. That is the status of the audit that has just been finalized. I'll go quickly in terms of financial information, Chairperson. I have dealt with everything that we are doing, but I will go very quickly. For 1920, Chair, we requested Parliament to assist us with 64.2 billion rand. The majority of that money, for obvious reasons, are going to rail, roads, and public transport programs. And we will unpack those in the slides that will follow. In terms of economic classification, Chairperson, we have let me just go to the column that talks to medium-term expenditure estimates, that is the third column from the right, 62 billion of that money goes into transfers and subsidies. 62 billion of the 64 billion goes to provinces and municipalities and entities. And then the department then gets left with the remainder, with 534 million going into compensation of employees, and then just under a billion, 913,501,000 going into goods and services. We have been growing steadily in terms of compensation of employees by design, not necessarily by mistake. We have had the structure that we had an agreement with Treasury that it will have to be filled incrementally based on the availability of the money, not necessarily that we will fill everything at once, because we do not necessarily have money. For this year, like I've indicated, we are just at 534, and we will increase to just over 600,000 in the third year, which is 2021-2022. If you look at it, it's exponentially in the main. It's not necessarily, while we will be filling certain positions, but in the main it's more conditions of services improvement. So CPI increases. Goods and services, Chairperson. The major cost drivers in terms of goods and services is your watchkeeping services, the oil pollution prevention services. We have the taxi scrapping, that is the administration, therefore. And then we have grant monitoring. I have indicated that we are improving the monitoring of the grants that we are giving to municipalities and provinces. Treasury has given us this money, which is ring-fenced. They said we cannot use it for any other thing except for the monitoring of the grants. And then we are improving the National Land Transport Information System. We are upgrading it. That is the permit system for economic regulation in the minibus taxis and buses. And then we have got a program that we would want to call, I mean, we not we would want, that we call Shova Galula in terms of bicycles. We have just increased the drastically, we're buying 3,000, 6,000. We are now buying in the region of 24,000 bicycles to assist the learners that walk less than 3 kilometers in the main, because those that walk are over 3,000 are supposed to be assisted through buses. And then other small items in terms of goods and services, as your smaller projects, that totals to 520. You just indicated the major, bigger ones. So the others are more in the regions of 10 or less million. Now, Chair, we have been given additional allocation. And I think I just want to emphasize one thing here. It looks like there has been a spike, and if you look at it, it talks to the others have said that we are increasing the use of consultants. But if you look at the first figure there, the National Household Travel Survey, we do it every 5 years. So it's a once-off allocation. It's not like it's going to be continuing. But we also are not going to use consultants for this unless if Chair, we say StatsSA is a consultant. We are going to use the services of Statistics South Africa as we have been doing from the 2003-2013, and then we now are at reviewing the 2013 survey. This survey helps us to tell us how many people use what mode of transport, and it helps us to plan better. For example, we all know from the 2013 that 58% of the people use taxis. We all know that the rail has improved a little bit to about 9%. The rest goes to buses. So it helps us in terms of the investment levels that we do in that space. So I really, because we were really...
Can I just propose that in 5 minutes?
I'll wrap up now, Chair. This was just the one item that we wanted to deal with. Okay, Chairperson, like we have indicated, all the transfers, that the 54 million that we have spoken about, the majority of it goes to PRFG, gets 11 billion. Public transport operations, which is a bus subsidy, 6.3. And then public transport networks, I wouldn't want to call this BRTs, because not in all cases we do BRTs, it's 6 billion. And then we have 100 million for the road asset management systems. And then in terms of our own agencies, SANRAL gets 31 billion this year. And then I was looking at PRASA, I don't see, PRASA, I see the previous page is 16 billion. So PRASA, SANRAL, and then PRMG and the transport grants are the major cost drivers or the beneficiaries of the, and that is just the graphical representation in terms of a pie chart, and that is also another graphical representation in terms of graphs based on what we call your public transport, that is PTOG, PRASA, and PTNG. Chairperson, this is the road maintenance and how it has grown over the years. The road maintenance grants is in light blue, and then the allocation to SANRAL is in dark blue, dark blue or navy blue. Plaza has been receiving these monies over the years. The majority of it goes into CAPEX, not operations. It's more for the new rolling stock. I think on operations they are struggling a little bit. Chair, that is more information about PRASA, and that is again just to unpack the issues around SANRAL. And then the liquidity in terms of the entities as the fourth quarter. You can see that PRASA has quite a little bit in the bank, but that is ring-fenced money. So maybe people will say, why are services struggling? So this is CAPEX. This is more for capital projects than operational projects. And then SANRAL also has quite a little bit in the bank. This ones I've spoken about, and this is a split /65 per province in terms of how much they get, Chairperson. So you can see that the last time I checked, KZN was leading, but it's because also KZN contributes more from its own budget. I think the challenge here is that this money that we give to provinces then don't allocate enough equitable share for roads. And that is the challenge that we are having. When we pump in more money, they reduce more money from the roads on their own. That is why you see, while we're trying to do something on maintenance, there is stagnation on the new roads, because this is not used for new roads. Okay, and then that is the public transport bus subsidies, how it has grown over the years. I will just move. I've explained the summaries, Chairperson. And then these are the municipalities that we assist. It is not that we don't want to assist everybody, but this is the little bit where we said we can do interventions and pilot and see if what we are trying to put in place works. If it does not work, we tweak it a little bit. If it will work, we will see how we spread it through to other municipalities. Joburg and Cape Town remains the main beneficiaries. The other smaller cities, they are not getting necessarily huge monies, but mainly because also they are moving very slowly. I think the likes of Buffalo City in the Eastern Cape has been bogged down by challenges internal in terms of procurements and other related issues. So you can see there are years where we even did not transfer money because they were forever in courts and litigations and so on. Now, Chair, there is what is unallocated is an incentive for those that will perform better, and this is the last slide, Chair. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Acting DG, for the presentation. I will now open the floor for engagement and questions. I've noticed let's start this way. Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Acting DG. I hope there's not too many actors there, otherwise we'll have an award ceremony. One of these days. However, having said that, I think we need to just understand, and possibly, Chairperson, you should actually put that in the program, is when are the entities going to come in the council to this particular committee, particularly Sandrail, and from Gauteng, there is a particular position on that. I'll get a mandate from the province on that particular one. So just to flag that. Two is DG, how do you harmonize between yourselves, the provinces, and local governments? What makes you decide to go into a local government to assist there? And what is the legal platform that you actually go into to do that? And thirdly, DG, I think I must come to your school that you're going to have, because I didn't understand most of the accents that you were using as such. So your school would be beneficial to us sitting here so we can understand your acronyms and what you're talking about. Thirdly, DG, is the question of security on the rail. What is being done to that particular issue? Is there security on the rail for the passengers and for rolling stock not getting burned? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. DDG, thank you for your presentation. Obviously, we're just going to all get to know each other over the next few years and learn what is your speciality. So please forgive me if some of these questions appear to be newbie questions, but obviously we're just coming to grips with your department. The first question I want to ask is, can you just inform the committee what the progress is on the NTLA bill, the NTLA amendment bill? Where is that at the moment? Is it coming to the NCOP? Is it done at the... I didn't see if you touched on it, and if you did, I do apologize. But if you could just give us progress on that. And then the next question is, in relation to... You referred on page 8 to the RPTN projects. And I specifically now refer to one of those projects, which is Go Durban. Go Durban envisages 27 corridors, I think. And for a long period of time. Etchegwini started this process around about 2011, 2012, 2013, around they started looking at it. And the Corridor 3, which was the corridor between Komashu and Panta, was supposed to be completed by March 2016. I was still councillor for that area at that time, and then I came to Parliament, and that project is still not finished, and is nowhere close to finished. And one of the primary reasons, I'm going to get to my question now, one of the primary reasons is that so-called business forums have popped up in these projects and have just arrived unannounced and have said, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, have arrived unannounced and said, we are a business forum in the area, although of course not registered, and not registered businesses, and we demand 30% of the contract. Literally like a good old style mafia protection racket stuff. And that has delayed this particular project massively, and I'm informed that around the country it's a similar problem. So I'm asking you, on massive infrastructure capex spends by municipalities on transport infrastructure, what authority does the transport, does your department have to get involved in those disputes to go in there? Because it is effectively just criminality. It's mafia style criminality. Do you get involved, or do you just wash your hands of it and say to Tommy Manyati and Etchegwini, listen, this and Carlos Estevez, this is your problem? Or do you actually intervene as a department to make sure that these projects carry on? Because this particular project is now at least 3 years over, and I'm assuming there's probably a massive budget overrun as well. So can you just give us your involvement there? I think that's something that really needs to be addressed. We have to wipe out the scourge right across South Africa. It's happening everywhere. And then could you just give us a bit more detail on your green strategy? You ran across it very, very quickly, but I'm quite certain that many sectors in South Africa, just like as I say, we will get to know each other and get to know policies, and apologies for my ignorance, but what is the department envisaging? Just a bit of an expansion on the green strategy in terms of how you, it's good to speak about it, but how you plan to actually roll it out in the South African environment, the actual green strategy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, welcome, Honorable Minister. We heard about what the Minister went through. We are happy that you were able to arrive. Honorable Kiva?
Yeah, good morning, Chair. And thank you, Acting DG, for that detailed presentation on your APP. We appreciate this. And I'll be very interested to know that this is your last day as the acting DG, and you indicated to us that you have a new DG tomorrow. It would be good if we were to have that first benefit of knowing who is the incoming DG, the UN. The first question will be related to the blue train, to the bullet train, which was announced by the dream of the president, to have a bullet train in the country, which he spoke about during SONA. And I would have expected that at least the initial phase of it, whether it's research or something related to that, would be reflected on this APP. Because once the president speaks, our anticipation is that that is the marching line, and then things ought to be done with immediate effect in that respect. The second question relates to the fact that I didn't really hear you talking about understanding. And understanding has been a major challenge, and I would have expected you to outline it when you spoke to challenges, for instance. I'll make an example that I do know that PRASA, for instance, sits with billions which it is unable to spend, either on maintenance or something to that effect. And then those resources get taken away again by the Treasury and they get used, for instance, on bailouts in one of your own entities, which is SANRAL. I would love to know what is the turnaround strategy insofar as that is concerned. How are you dealing with that situation so that it doesn't recur? The third question relates to the fact that some monies in the past 3 to 5 years have been taken again from the non-toll roads, and the non-toll roads manifest in the main in rural provinces. And those monies, they get taken away from that particular area, and they also get used to pay the debt that is in Gauteng insofar as the e-tolls are concerned. Well, that has already happened. The question there is that how are you going to deal with that going forward? Are you able to recoup those funds so that you can be able to close that gap that gets created going forward, or are those monies gone for good? The fourth question relates to the road, the rural road infrastructure. In this area, it's a big challenge. There's a huge gap between the infrastructure in urban areas and rural areas. You sort of find a scenario that there is a continuing trend of building infrastructure only in urban areas, and we tend not to appreciate the fact that we are predominantly a rural country, and that is not a curse, actually. It should be taken as a blessing that we are, and then therefore there must be an appreciation from a planning point of view. I would make an example because I come from rural areas. We have 863 traditional areas in the country. Out of those, it doesn't even make up to 5%, Minister, for instance, of the roads in those areas that are tarred. What would be a game changer? And we're not talking about long stretches of kilometers. What would be a game changer in a post-colonial country is to see these roads being tarred. That would really be a game changer, because the bulk of the money goes to maintenance, and we are fine with that, but we're saying that it should change now. There should be a picture wherein rural roads are actually tarred, because the traditional area, particularly the great places, are areas of convergence where rural inhabitants access services from those points, and it would be a huge game changer. Linked to that is that there are undeclared national key points in rural communities, the royal palaces and so on and so forth. And these are very key insofar as our heritage and local tourism and cultural tourism. So if you were to invest in that space, these would be definitely be legacy projects. And for me, I would like to see that being reflected in your APP going forward. Number five, where I come from in the Eastern Cape, we account for more than 800 kilometers of the seaboard of the country. The roads that lead to the coast, where we anticipate a huge activity around the ocean's economy, those roads remain untarred, and we would like you to pay a particular attention to that, because it would turn around the economy of my province in particular if those roads were to be quite accessible. It's very difficult to reach those coastal areas in the province. Lastly, I want to speak to the skills development. I would love to get a sense of your plan. I didn't hear you talking about bursaries for youth, particularly rural youth, and the career exhibitions that you spoke to. I would love those career exhibitions coming to the rural spaces as well, so that the youth in those areas are not left out with the opportunities that you have if you do have these bursaries. But I anticipate that the department itself, as well as the entities of the department, do have bursary schemes. And I want to link that to all the summits and the conferences that are held by the department please try by all possible means that these do not only take place in urban spaces. Try to have a balance and host some of these right into the rural spaces, rural towns and so on and so forth. So it's both questions as well as suggestions, because I think in the main, you can see the impulses of transformation in the APP that we have, and we'd like you to pay particular attention and emphasize on transformation, because that's what we want to see, that this country is changing and this country really is going the direction that we wish it to take insofar as the development, being a developmental state. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chairperson. Let's join my colleagues to welcome the presentation for the acting DG, and also greet Dadim Balula, Minister, coming from the province I'm coming from, Free State. Highly wanted to honor our invitation to be part of this meeting. Chair, I'm going to be very short because some of the members asked the question that I'm supposed to ask. Firstly, acting DG, you said you buy a bicycle for the learners who travel long distance from home to school. NSOPU, we are not like the NA because we represent the provinces. And for the purpose of oversight, one will have to know where do you give these learners, in which provinces. I know it's going to be difficult for now to give us the specific of these learners that the department buy the bicycle for them. But maybe we can send, if the chair will allow us, the information of the specific provinces to the secretary. Secondly, DG, on page 27, under administration, you said you give the training, we do the training for the staff. One will ask the question that, how often that do you train this staff? And you talk about also the issue of the bazaaries. How many of them that you give them the bazaaries? Honorable Minister, I was looking at your delegation here. When they introduced themselves, the beautiful lady who's sitting next to you, she said to us she's acting. And then that day at the last, she's acting. And where I'm seated, I was worried to say the manner in which we are working so very hard. If you've got these two vacancies that is acting, when we're going to fill it? And how long these two officials maybe they were acting, and why is the reason for them to acting in your department? Because your department is very key, and we realize that you're working very hard. So I just want to check with you, Honorable Minister. And also I have the concern as a woman, because it's only this one beautiful lady in front of us. All of them here are men, so we understand our mandate. Next time, that is the request, Honorable Minister, if we can just increase the official to be a woman, take other position maybe that you are going to create in your department. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Two issues from myself. The first one relates to the challenges around road accident fund. It's liquidity. It has been in the news. The DG said nothing about it. If the committee could be taken into confidence in terms of what are the strategy to turn it around. Now that there are some proposals to work around that. The second one relates to the impact of the non-payment of the E-12, also on the ability of Sandal to sell bonds on the market.
Of course, I mean, I heard the minister just tweet back during the tension between our leadership in the Twitter space. You made a commitment, but I think I'm more concerned about its liquidity. But I think from the presentation, I think there is a case to say we don't have to worry a lot for now. But of course, one of the concerns that is that the committee raised in the past in the analysis of your document is its ability to have its bond marketed. The third one relates you said the department got unqualified report with one material finding. You did not dwell into the details around that. You could just be taking the conclusion on that. And then the last one, because I'm from the province of Northern Cape, I'm also a bit tempted to raise a particular matter, of course, against the background that the DG has raised to say the provinces have a propensity not to budget more from the equitable share, so that they are able to be like the province of KZN. I think that's what you said, as a preamble to that aspect. I'm more concerned about the lack of rural municipalities, just like Honorable Kiva has said. From where I come from, there's one district in Northern Cape where schools were closed by the community just on the basis of lack of access roads. Of course, the department, in the last 3 years, they have been budgeting for it, but at a minimal scale. I think that's why they've only done 22. The road was done through partnership with SIOC, the Community Development Trust, that was established by Tim Bahan. And there's a team that the province has constituted, with Ministry of Finance and also the Premier. So I think it's a matter that probably that at some point it could be explored further, because the matter, every time when you go to the election, there's a threat by the communities to influence the school. So I think it's a matter that you want to put forth as a representative from Northern Cape. Other than that, it will be Honorable Mr. Tango, and then we'll then give the team led by the minister to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I think we should just be a bit cautious. Although we are look at provinces, we shouldn't become so provincial that we don't realize that we're a national, one unitary state. And the attack that I hear on subtly and consistently on SANRAL from other provinces could create other arguments about taxation, and I don't think we want to go in that direction. I think that there are needs in all provinces, that all province provincial needs need to be looked at and weighed and be dealt with. But to isolate one and where there is an issue that may not be resolvable, and I don't expect the minister to resolve it today. He's got a process, I understand, that he's going to go through, so I don't expect him to report back on that today. But when SANRAL comes to appear before us, as other 10 entities will, we need to actually ask those particular questions. But I just want to caution against the provincialism that I see creeping in and saying SANRAL, SANRAL, SANRAL from other provinces. We should just be careful about that.
Thank you, Honorable Dalwa. Maybe we must give over to the minister just to greet us.
And then you'll give over to the DG.
Let the DG, then the minister will come.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. No, no, I was going to say maybe I should pull back and then the minister greet you. But he says he'll come at the end, and then that's fine. Chair, I think we left the issues and the details around the name of the DG deliberately because we're waiting for the minister. I'm sure it's one of those things that is going to talk to the committee about. He will unveil the name. We know it, but we didn't want to steal that thunder. Chairperson, the colleagues will help me on the other questions and the specifics. Chair, as you rightly said, I mean, as you indicated to us, and now I see the members, the honourable members have left. The entities you said they will come here, you've even given us the date. Sandra will be here on the 28th of August. And then Prasa will be here on the 9th of August. So I think that then would answer to that question. Chair, we go through some process when we identify, more especially the rural municipalities, which were not necessarily identified in the public transport strategy, but where we want to assist in terms of the transport plans and the rural municipalities. We go to the, we use the poverty index, but we also go to, there's a list of the deep rural municipalities that was compiled by COPTA through the president some years ago. So we prioritize those ones. Chair, we've been to almost all the provinces now in the six where we have intervened. We've been to Oar Tambo, we've been to I forgot the name in the Northern Cape, but we have been to Vembe, we've been to Sekhukhune. So we try to go to different provinces at different times. We are now going to do Amathole and Capricorn. So that is what we use in terms of going into the rural municipalities. In terms of the 13 cities, those were predetermined before. But basically it was a pilot. It is a pilot wherein we want to see if what we have provided for in the NLTA will work. And then we will spread it to the other cities. That also then deals with the issue. The NLTA, we wanted to believe that it has even passed the NCOP, Honorable Chair, in the 5th administration. However, as I'm sure you know the process of Parliament more than I do, then normally the bills do die, and then immediately when the new administration comes, we are requested to indicate the ones we want to resuscitate. So it's one of those that we have requested for its resuscitation, because we believe it was, I think it missed final approval by just one meeting in the 5th Parliament. So this is very, very final stage. So it will be resuscitated. Obviously, this committee, because it's going to also vote on it, will then be taken into confidence on what was there. And then we'll be guided in terms of how far and how do we go. Chair, the issues around Godeben are all true. We had this issue in the Pantan area of disturbances by people who wanted to participate. But these are the challenges we also had in the road space. And in all of these projects, we then implore or enthuse the municipalities to involve local people as much as possible, but not that they are guns held on their heads at all costs. But also there's then the dimension of what we call industrial transition, because the taxi services also gets affected, and as a result they need to be taken on board. That is why some of these projects are taking time, because of those discussions and negotiations. Godeben is back on track. It's one of those that in September, if all goes to plan, phase one will be launched in terms of operations. It will not be the Pandan commercial area, because that was delayed because of construction could not go ahead. But it will get back on track from what we get. Now, what do we do as national? The former minister Nzimande went specifically to Durban to address the municipality, but to also address the business communities, those affected people, those people who wanted to have a stake, and then to outline the processes of how they are involved, but that they should not also interfere and disturb at all costs, because they want business. So we unfortunately, that is how far we can go and tell them how procurement in government works. That has happened. So Mr. Banyati is now back on track in terms of fulfilling his obligations as a technical person. I think he's been assisted by both the national, also working with the council there, because the minister addressed the council also. I think Mr. Temba Tenzos here will talk to the what are the objectives and the principles around the green transport strategy, and then we'll elaborate further. When we started, we indicated that this APP was the one that was still responding to the last year of the strategic plan that was started in the previous administration. Now, as indicated also in the budget speech in the National Assembly by the Honourable Minister, matters around research of new technologies and services and projects like the Blue Train are very much in the radar. Minister actually indicated that we will do the prelim work and do feasibilities and researches to see, to look into the possibilities of whether those could be done and how they could be done. So they will reflect in our plans going forward. This is partly the work of just wrapping up on the last day of the strat plan, Honourable Member. We have indicated, although this is an APP looking forward to the year, we did touch on some of the pressing areas on expenditure. But any time we can come and do detailed expenditure reports. We PRASA did underspend on CAPEX. Fortunately, that is ring-fenced money, but also PRASA is allowed to keep money and not return it if it is earmarked, and not return it to the National Treasury. So it does have money, but it's on the apex. It is struggling a bit on the operational side in terms of the operational costs. Why were monies also then moved to SANRAL? In the first instance, the money was moved to SANRAL to deal with the issue on the non-toll portfolio, not on the tolling portfolio, on the non-tolling portfolio. I need to emphasize that. And then secondly, there were then some strategic projects that were identified within SANRAL. But it was also because there was a little movement within the PRASA in terms of the budget and the spending on that side. Now, the latest is that on what is called projects, whether strategic or not, there could be a reversal of those kind of monies. It's back into PRASA because PRASA now we're building capacity and turning it around. The minister will talk to you about the war room that he has established to make sure that PRASA fulfills its mandate in terms of the services. So we believe that with those interventions, PRASA will have its capabilities back, given a little bit of time to then carry on with the capital projects of stations upgrades, signaling upgrades, signaling improvements, and then the rolling stock modernization program. I think that, as the minister says, indicated to the public, there is work that is happening in terms of how we deal with the issues related to tolling, and that the discussions are at the ministerial level, and then an announcement will be made around that. We try by all means not to mix the tolling and the non-tolling portfolio, specifically because with the non-tolling portfolio, we know that it affects the rural areas in the main. So we definitely not mix the two portfolios within SANRA. But as I'm sure the day SANRA comes, we'll explain that better on how that separation helps. Very little cross-subsidization happens, if any. However, we also are mindful of the fact that as a country, we can't afford a SANRA that defaults on the guarantees, because then it's the same ESCOM story. It then puts the country in jeopardy. So if I'm a larger person, I can be as stop there and indicate that probably plans around specifically the tolling space will be made very soon. And that deals with the fact that we are not focusing on we are not focusing on urban areas only. If you look even at our PRMG, it's so biased towards rural areas, it's unbelievable. We give more money to rural provinces for maintenance. We were just demonstrating that as we put money for maintenance, then the provinces tend to then relax on the responsibility in terms of new roads. Because that the new roads are not supposed to come out of the PRMG. Are supposed to come out of own equitable share. We've been working on a plan, and I'm sure Mr. Savisa will elaborate on it, to see if we cannot even tap onto to the PRMG to look into how we assist upgrading or the issues of tarring of roads where there are no tar roads. But for now, the conditions on PRMG is strictly on maintaining what we have. But the concerns that you are raising, everybody else has raised them, and then it is a matter that we are working on and on a mechanism to see how best we can deal with it. Maybe at some stage we'll come and just give a background of how the PRMG came about, because we were worried that people were constructing roads without maintaining what we have, and then roads leading into what we call Bermuda roads and not being completed, and then but also the deterioration of what we had. And then that's where the concept of a PRMG came about, But now we now know that the construction of new roads is now suffering. Of course, others will commence, and we believe we and the provinces are told to prioritize what would be key in a particular locality. We don't just move in and build the roads. We then engage the community in terms of priorities. So if the royal palaces are a priority, we get informed and then we intervene accordingly. Maybe we will provide a list of where we are going to do awareness campaigns and expos. But we try to spread throughout the country. We also have presence in almost everywhere where we go. We will improve. It was said that we need to also consider seminars and conferences in rural areas. We note that. There are instances where, because of a specific target group, we will go to a certain area. But we've held the maritime day conferences and parallel events even in non-coastal cities, for example, just to make sure that we penetrate fully. For example, the International Aviation Day today will be going to Limpopo. It has gone to quite a number of provinces. We will be going to Limpopo, and we will go to the next province next time around. We target learners that walk less distance, not long distance, that walk, when I say less, I mean those that cannot be covered by a school bus. Those are the ones that we target with bicycles. And then we also get, we go to provinces, we talk to the departments of transport and the departments of education. And then they give us and prioritize schools, and then we go to the our principals and make sure that we are able to make those bicycles available. I'm not making an invitation, but we also listen to the honorable members when they identify a need in particular localities, and we do intervene in those spaces. But we can give you what we will send what we have already have and have identified. But there are other requests also, we then put them on the queue. And then we will respond accordingly. I think we can give you the list of bursaries and the training programs that we have in the department. We will supply that. Chair, you are very right. RAF is not in a good space. RAF is not in a good space. Basically, if it was a private company, it would have closed shop long time ago. Fortunately, it is a government entity, and we still do get money from the fuel levy to make sure that we keep afloat. Chairperson, contrary to what others may not want to hear, I think the RAPS deal has some of the answers around the challenges faced by RAF. And then, Chair, the matter of emphasis around the unqualified audit opinion received by the department on the financial statements, it was an understatement on commitments. Actually, not that we did wrong or an error. We according to how we have been doing it over the years, a commitment of around under commitment of 10 million over a budget of 64 million. We use a simple ratio of saying it's not material. But when it is the AG used their own tools, it then popped out on the material side. Hence, then it appeared. So we just missed a clean audit on that misunderstanding. That's the first part. I think, and then the other smaller issues were instances where on areas of irregular expenditure. Not that we did not disclose. We had internal controls to detect and disclose those. But the auditor said that because they are recurring, those are the things that would have meant that you are a little bit far from a clean audit. I think I've dealt with the other issues. I've left the green transport strategy and probably more information around the roads. And then we've left the issue of the DG, which the minister I'm sure will address, and the issues around the key vacancies in the department. Thank you very much. Mr. Ten.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. Good morning, Minister. On the green transport strategy, the few things I can highlight is that it has been passed by Cabinet. It's now a government and a national document. It's targeting to make an impact foreseeable by 2030. We must have tangible things, and we must also relate to the commitments we have made at international level, for example, through the Paris Agreement and the UNFCCC. It is not a high-level document that only looks at what the international community is saying. It is also very, very localized and local. For example, it's promoting the use of existing knowledge we have had for a long time, for example, through SANEDI and CSIR, where we know that CSIR has pockets of excellence on the battery manufacturing and things like that. So intergovernmentally, we work also with DTI to promote industries in South Africa to participate in this massive wave of change. The Green Transport Strategy is therefore interlinked with the new changes that we see in the world, like the driverless cars and things like that, because that's how the production is happening these days. There's a lot of talking of different industries together. If you think of the fourth industrial revolution as well as the IT change, the ICT change. But at a practical level, another example of what, in fact, the Green Transport Strategy has got 10 pillars that define what exactly is green and what can be done. And one of them, which is very important, is just the mobility, the encouraging people where it is possible to use less carbon emitting activities. And the one activity of transportation that doesn't have any carbon emission is walking. So walking where it's possible is encouraged. Not only for the transport benefits, obviously, also for the core benefits of health. But then there's another pillar about using alternative fuel sources where it's possible. Gases like compressed natural gas, which is already being used in some of the buses. And we've tried it with the public transport in the form of taxis in Gauteng. I know it's an urban area, but that's where the concentration was and the information was easy to distribute. There is also electric vehicles concept, which is divided into two. There are full electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles. So we are promoting that to the extent that within the department, we have started, though we have not publicized too much, what we can call green procurement guidelines. That will assist for us so that at some stage even our minister will be more green if they're driving practically possible electric vehicles, fully electrical or hybrid. So there are many examples of what, but the most important thing is that we want to be able to measure the country against the commitments we have made, which is a very, very important thing. We have made commitments to say in by 2030 we'll have replaced some of the old vehicles that are using fossil fuel with electric or with hydrogen cells. All this technology is expensive at the moment, so we are working with National Treasury and others on incentives. Not all will be achieved directly by only by green transport strategy or when it works alone. It's very important. That is why it is placed under, I suspect, that's the main reason why it is under integrated transport planning, because the benefits will be in integrating everything. But it's not limited to land transport, though we do not have specialities on maritime and civil aviation, but we are working together with those branches, and they are more international than our land transport. And on the public transport side, as a big measure, we are promoting rail transport as public transport. It's a very green transport, as we all know. If and when it works well, per capita, per person, you emit so little. Because the most important thing measure here is we must emit less per person, per kilometer traveled. And if we do that, we are contributing to saving the environment. So it is available mainly as a web-based document. If there is any more information, as the acting DG has promised, we can supply any other information. I want to emphasize the practicality of us trying to live what we are preaching, and also as South Africa not to be behind. Where we can, we must just seize the opportunity. We are also aware of the jobs that have to be changed because the world is moving that way, and we are very cautious not to impose where the market is not ready, but where the market is ready, we are moving with full speed. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, DG. Thank you. Morning, Minister. I think I just want to add one comment on the issue of roads and the biasness of us being urban rather than rural. I think let me just go through, draw the attention of the committee on slide 65 of the presentation. And look at how much we allocate to the Eastern Cape, how much are we allocating to KZN, and how much are we allocating to Limpopo. These are rural provinces that we are talking about here. And look at how much are we putting to Gauteng, for instance, which is quite wall-to-wall major metros. Very small amount. That's what I just wanted to say, so that we deal with the issue of biasness in terms of allocation. So this is very clear that we are putting our efforts on rural areas of our country. We are fully aware that more than 750,000 kilometers of road, two-thirds thereof, comes from these provinces. So that's why we are targeting those provinces in terms of infrastructure maintenance and management. So I just wanted to say that. The second one would be, DG, would be the issue of some roads which we are trying to build, but unfortunately we are prevented from building because of the local issues. I know the honourable member comes from Eastern Cape. There is a major corridor which was going to unlock the potential of the Eastern Cape as one of the rural areas. That road is N2 Wild Coast. We call it Wild Coast. It's one of the longest corridors which we have identified as Transport Department from Swaziland all the way up to here to the Western Cape. They said, I know that one of the leaders said, when is it going to be tamed? Because it's always wild. It's a wild coast corridor. That's the one, the N2 Wise Coast. That corridor was identified to unlock the potential of this corridor. I know the honourable member spoke about the Southern Corridor. That was the aim of this corridor. But unfortunately, because of some challenges, we have not even started with the new bridges, two bridges that were awarded. Contractors could not start because of the issues on the ground. We would request the honourable member there, because he is very much aware of this problem, to assist us so that these two bridges, at least the Msikaba Bridge and Mtwentweni Bridge, this is the 9 billion rand worth of a project which is going down the drains. I would request that members sitting here, because we are the public faces out there, assist us to deal with the politics on the ground so that we can implement the project. That is where the challenge is right now. So it's not it is not correct that we are biased on this. That's a rural area we are talking about, virgin land, where never ever, even before there was a road, we have identified it to put a road there. So I just wanted to deal with the matter so that we are on the same page. It's more than a 9 billion rand worth of a project. And it's a major corridor. It's the longest corridor which runs coastline, the whole coastline. So I just wanted to deal with that. And also look at the amount you are putting on rural roads. The 13 billion rand, more than that, goes to the rural areas, if you look at it. So I just wanted to, DG, just to add on this so that we are all on the same page. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thanks for that clarity. I think we are. You don't have to worry. I think you also have a minister that can unlock that. But we're definitely... Minister, let me give over to you because we muscles running against time, and we need to when we conclude, we should be having a quorum. Thank you, Minister.
Yeah, thank you very much, and members, honourable members of the select committee, the acting DG, and all senior officials in the department. And my apologies for arriving late. There is a problem of air traffic in South Africa which we need to resolve. The focus of this sixth administration is on accelerated implementation, working with all South Africans, and cut on the apex priorities announced by the President. In ensuring that we infuse the Kaoleza ethos in our work, we have conceptualized the 100-day plan as an integral part of the annual performance plan, which I think the DG acting would have presented parts of that in his presentation. On corporate governance, which is what you raised with a particular flagging of gender balance within the department in terms of senior management in all positions in the department, it's a matter that we want to infuse in our approach going forward as a matter of principle. We've prioritized the appointment of the Director General, as the department has for a prolonged period not had a full-time Director General. I'm happy to announce that Mr. Alec Muyemi has been appointed Director General with effect from the 1st of August, that is tomorrow. We have also committed to a process of appointing boards where their terms have either expired, coming to an end, or where there is an interim board in this regard. We are determined to ensure that corporate governance is strengthened in all our entities. This will be made possible by appointing to our boards men and women who are not only adequately skilled to enable sound decision-making, but also those whose commitment to improving the lives of ordinary South Africans is unflinching. We will deliberately seek out young, educated and talented people, especially women, to infuse new energy and fresh thinking at board level. Transformation, our key priority, is to aggressively drive the transformation of the sector and to open up opportunities for historically disadvantaged individuals, women and youth. Many opportunities exist across the transport sector with the potential not only of imparting skills on our youth, but enable them to make serious contribution to economic growth. Our particular focus will be on maritime, aviation, and road subcontractors or subsectors. Road safety, we have made a commitment to arresting the carnage on our roads, has never been greater. The implementation of a 24-hour, 7-day shift structure within the traffic law enforcement fraternity is receiving priority attention. As we take the matter to the bargaining council, we call on organized labor to work with us in supporting this intervention. But over and above that, in the next couple of weeks or so, President will be signing into law the ARTO bill, and we intend to intensify our initiatives around this, but also the remake without squashing Arrive Alive concept, but giving it a facelift and ensuring that we entrench the and working together with our people in terms of safety on the roads. BRASA, we considered to Parliament that BRASA has lost critical engineering capacity and it is unable to improve its operational performance without a decisive intervention. Following a directive from the President in March this year, my predecessor initiated a process which saw the board making certain commitments to turn around the business. We'll now inject the Kaoleza culture and ensure that the board and management at BRASA understand that agency must underpin our decision making if we want to improve the quality of service. But you must equally understand that the board of BRASA is interim and will be due by September. However, it is my intention to appoint a new board as quick as possible, even before then. It is my intention, within a prescribed lawful period, to appoint the CEO, the group CEO, within a reasonable time, so as to implement the intervention strategy we want to implement within BRASA. And this will be driven through a ministerial war room, which will play an oversight and enabling role over the turnaround strategy. The ministerial war room will also guide intervention to realize three key objectives. Firstly, the first objective being service recovery to focus on rolling stock, availability and reliability, infrastructure availability, reliability, and train performance. As you will have seen, we have gone around certain areas and where there's been a congestion in certain corridors in our country, and the cry is the same, and the issues raised are the same. So the war room seeks to intervene to turn the situation around. The second objective is safety management, which entails putting in place effective measures to protect rolling stock, staging yards, pairway, electrical and signal infrastructure, depots, stations, and most importantly, passengers on board our trains. Integral to this is achieving full compliance with the Railway Safety Regulator permit conditions and directives. And in this regard, we'll work with SAPS, particularly in relation to training of our security in terms of public order in the trains, but over and above combative, in terms of reacting to criminal elements that are running down the service we are rendering in this particular sector. The third objective is accelerated implementation of the modernization program. This entails urgently creating capacity for BRASA to manage capital projects and spend its capital budget to achieve effective sequencing of critical infrastructure. We may want to embark on certain guerrilla tactics in terms of achieving this, precisely because we don't have the luxury of time in the context of Kaulesa, but within the permit of the law and good corporate governance. And in this particular instance, you will know that BRASA has not been able to undertake full spending on its capital budget. The ministerial war room interventions are aimed at stabilizing BRASA's operations and achieving tangible results with 100 days. I want to explain the war room. The war room intervention is to turn around the situation in relation to the main areas where we are affected by non-availability and reliability of transport in terms of time and security and safety in our rail transport. So we seek to intervene decisively with regard to that. But the turnaround strategy is in the long term, and which now they've come to present to the minister in terms of the implementation through the steering committee of that turnaround strategy. You will realize that whilst this has been adopted by my predecessor, but BRASA have been slow in terms of the implementation of this turnaround strategy. We'll also be paying serious attention to measures needed to improve safety in the passenger rail environment. I've spoken about that already. Integrated public transport networks, we have committed that over the next 9 months, we'll be operationalizing integrated public transport networks in the 5 cities of Mbombela, Ethekwini, Rustenburg, Polokwane, and Mangaung. This will primarily take the form of bus rapid transit systems functioning as a catalyst for seamlessly integrated cities. As we leave here now, this afternoon we go to the Southern Cape in the Western Cape to resolve Gore George, which has been stuck in terms of implementation. So we talk to all stakeholders. We're working with the provincial government, and that goes also for the Western Cape in terms of the M2. So we are resolving all these issues, but where we are ready, we're going to see the speedy rollout of this operationalizing the integrated public transport network in the 5 cities where we are ready. In terms of e-tolls, the demand to scrap e-tolls in Gauteng is a matter we assist with. A process is underway to look at various options under the leadership of the Department of Transport, working with SANRAL, the Gauteng Province and National Treasury. The team is grappling with the reality that there is a debt that needs to be paid for the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Program. The final report on this matter will be tabled by the end of August 2019. And the entire process includes engagement with both houses in Parliament in the direction that we are taking. But it's not easy because it involves people, but at the same time it involves our priorities in terms of economic upheavals we've had and where we seek to intervene going forward. So we need to address the question of the debt and many other challenges that we've faced. And it is not going to be easy, but we need to prepare society for a solution that is going to be good for us and society. It's just like the electricity problem in Soweto through Eskom. You cannot address the problems of Eskom if everything else is going to come from the fiscus and communities don't come to the party. And the biggest question is, if communities have to come to the party, what deal do you strike with them? It could be prepaid arrangement, or otherwise you go on business as usual, which is impossible. But at the present moment, they are languishing in debt in terms of what they could pay back to Eskom, which amount into billions. And that goes also for this. You've got good roads, everything else, and people don't want to pay. Probably how we introduce some of the mechanisms are problematic for those who use the road in our country and so on. So we need to change the mindset in how we seek to address this. But nonetheless, We're looking at everything, including scrapping the ETOs. What is the most viable option for us, and what will work for our country and our economy? And it's going to be a tough debate, which we'll confront head on, and not a debate engagement based on what is before us and what needs to be done. We've got to move forward on the ETOs and close them. We may not make everybody happy, but nonetheless, we will make the country happy in the long term. And that is what we're going to do. The Road Accident Fund is faced with serious challenges relating to its ability to honor claims. However, it is abundantly clear that the current dispensation of the Road Accident Fund is not sustainable. We are determined to move with speed in changing the Road Accident Fund from a fault-based policy approach to a no-fault policy-based approach. In the coming months, we'll be reintroducing to Parliament the Road Accident Benefit Scheme Bill to address this. Equally, that is not going to be easy because there are those with self-interest who are going to fight it out. But we are ready for that. But over and above that, we are busy to, even the RAF board is interim, is now working on a month-to-month basis. We want to finalize that within 100 days by end of August to appoint a new board and also to appoint a new CEO. Men and women who are having the requisite skills and the vision of where we want to. This is an entity of about 250 billion, and yesterday in our top management, the acting DG said we could be approaching 300 billion liability of this particular fund. So we need to arrest the carnage in this regard, in a lack of better words, in terms of the Road Accident Fund. So we assist with that, and we are in the advanced process of shortlisting and finalizing the appointment of board members and embarking on the process of appointing the CEO. So those are issues, Chairperson and members, honorable members, that would like to bring to your attention briefly in terms of the APP supporting the department we seek to do in the immediate and in the long term. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister, for the overview in terms of the interventions and the leadership that the Minister is going to exercise in terms of refocusing the department on those key areas of concern that the Minister has highlighted. As a select committee, we are going to have a dynamic relationship with the department. Like as pointed out, we are different from the National Assembly, so sometimes we are going to be more focusing on provinces because of the character of this house. So in certain areas we are going to be more detailed in terms of where we come from, but not overlooking the unitary nature of this house. Let me take this opportunity to express gratitude to the minister and the team. We have some money and house rules that we need to deal with, so we will be able to have a constant engagement. I did indicate before the minister arrived that there are areas of work that we have lined up, particularly in terms of interaction with Sunrail and also with Fraser, but also with other entities. I suspect, given the picture that you have just raised around RAF, we have to add RAF in terms of our program. But in terms of our interaction with those entities, when we interact with them, definitely the political leadership of the department will be with us. We won't just go direct to them without you. We respect leadership and how we have worked as a house with the departments. So, Madam Chief Minister, you are excused because we have to finalize some work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairperson, can we?
Honourable members, we have Honourable Bhatesh, we just have the last two items, the adoption of the minutes and also the adoption of the program, so that we then at least are able to leave. Any correction that Honourable members would want to make on the minutes? The minutes of the 24th of July, the first page deals with the attendance, and also the second one, and then opening and welcome, and then the third page deals with presentation of the annual performance plan of the Department of Public Works. Is there any correction that members would want to make? In the absence of that, can we then have a mover for the adoption? Honorable Dango, followed, seconded by Honorable Fates. And then in terms of the program, there's a second term program of the Select Committee. We might have to do all of us have it. It's what I read is the between the 20 and the 22nd of August will be the strategic planning workshop. I suspect that affects all the Select Committees. Wednesday is the SANRAL engagement of the 28th of August, and then on the 11th of September is the engagement with BRASA. I think the issue of RAF is a bit dire, and we might have to also consider it, given the urgency around it. Between the 16th to the 20th of September is the provincial week, and then the 23rd of September is the constitutional clause. Any reflection? Honorable Dango?
Chairperson, maybe we should give the SANRAL one the chance for the ministerial committee to conclude their work, so that SANRAL can report back with some definite things on there. So maybe we should bring RAF in there and push SANRAL to a time that is more convenient.
Members agreed? So that we allow that process between the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Transport to be completed.
Thank you.
Honourable members, then with that amendment, can we get a move for the adoption of the program? Honourable Dango, Honourable Bhatesh. Thank you. The meeting is now adjourned. Can I also take this opportunity to express gratitude to our honourable members for the brilliant work that we have done. It was the induction period, but I think with your wisdom and brilliance and expertise, I think we are beginning to find our feet. And also the secretary, the researcher, and the support team, my gratitude. Thank you. The meeting is now adjourned.
And get those bridges broken. You're going to drop the
You are the right person.
Thank you.